Welcome to season 3 of You're Not Alone with Tansen. My name is Tansen, and if you've followed my journey, you know that I'm not only a musician, but I'm also a mental health advocate. I use my platform to help spread awareness, love, build community, and simply help people feel less alone in their struggles. In the last couple of years, I've had the chance to interview people from all over the world about a huge variety of mental health topics, and I cannot thank each of you enough for helping us continue to shine a light on the world. Every other week this season, we're bringing you the best interviews we've had. Make sure to like and follow this podcast if you're enjoying it. And if you want to keep up with everything we've got going, follow us on socials at Tansen T Music. Hope you enjoy. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of You're Not Alone with Tansen. I'm so excited. I, of course, am your host, Tansen. Today, we're going to be talking with a girl named Jess, and we're going to be talking about caregiving for her brother, Daniel, with a diagnosis of CP, which may sound familiar from last year. We did an entire episode about cerebral palsy with my buddy, Will, but I love this side of the story. So we're going to be hearing from Jess, like I said, from the point of view of a caregiver, but not only a caregiver, but a sister, a family member. So I feel like that's incredibly interesting. And I think a lot of people can relate. I know on social media and a lot of my loved ones and friends are caregivers for family members, especially as we get older and people get sick. So I can't wait to hear Jess's point of the story. But you know what? I'm just going to let you introduce yourself. So tell us a little bit about Jesse. Tell us a little bit about Daniel, whatever you want to share with my followers.
All right. Hey, I'm Jess. So I'm 31 years old. I'm married with 2 kids. My husband and I actually moved next door to my parents so I could help support my family and caregiving to my brother. Personally, I enjoy living a healthy lifestyle, working out, that sort of thing, and styling my home. And I like fashion. So that's kind of more of the personal side. But Daniel, he's 30 years old. He has cerebral palsy due to a lack of oxygen during his birth. He's a proud uncle. He loves to be an uncle, which is really special to watch. And he also enjoys being at our family's cottage and just being outside. I think my family's cottage is his favorite place to be. So yeah, he just has an adventurous spirit, loves to just enjoy the great outdoors, however he can.
That's so cool. I love it. So the cottage, is that like where he stays or is that somewhere y'all visit?
It's where we visit. Yeah. So we'll take vacations down there during our summers and that sort of thing.
That is awesome. I love it so much. Okay. So to be clear, you're Daniel's older brother by just 1 year, huh?
Yeah. We're only 13 months apart. And for some reason, people think that Daniel's older. I don't know why. Yeah. But I'm the oldest.
Okay. Holy moly. Okay. So we were talking about it a little bit before, and we can get into this later, but you guys all decided to kind of live together to help take care of Daniel, right?
Yeah. I think when my parents were thinking about Daniel's future and even my future too, and kind of what that would look like, I think for most families in this sort of a special life, you worry about your neurotypical child and your special needs child and how that all is going to mesh as everyone becomes adults. So my parents built a granny flat style addition on their home, which actually my grandparents lived in when we were a lot younger. So they lived there for, I don't know, like 17 years, I think it was. So it was really great support for my parents, especially when we were little, because my grandma really took the role helping wherever she could at the time to get my parents to go out on date nights and that sort of stuff. So it worked really well. And then once my husband and I got married, we lived on our own for a little bit. But then I was pregnant with our first son and we decided to sell our house and ended up moving here, oddly enough, but it worked out. And we did a lot of renovating to kind of make the space our own. So it was really special. And now that it's all said and done, I have 2 kids and it's worked really well because I bring my kids to work with me and it's easy for me to, you know, come back to put one kid down for a nap or what have you. And it's also really great for my parents too, so that they have the extra support with Daniel. So we help them, but in a lot of ways, they help us too.
Yeah. So I love the idea of like family coming first. I think that's so cool. I feel like a lot of people listening are going to be like, that sounds like a nightmare. You know, like,
yeah,
a lot of people aren't as close to their family as it sounds like you guys are, which I think that's so cool. I think that's neat.
Yeah. Like we all need our breaks from each other from time to time. And we definitely have our family arguments and that sort of thing. But with this life that we live, we've really rallied together, and my parents really enforced just that we're a team and that we need to work together. And so that's what we're doing.
That is so cool. So was your husband like, let's do it? Or did you have to sweet talk him into like, let's move into my parents? And you know,
the poor guy, I mean, he's been amazing through it all, but I don't think anything could really prepare him for this.
Yeah. I was going to
say, married into.
I feel like he kind of signed up for you and Daniel, you know, like he married the family.
And I did explain it to him when we were dating, and I'm like, look, if you can't handle this, I get it. It's a lot. But when we first were dating, I would say he looked at it more of like a really positive thing. He's like, you're an angel. It's amazing what you do for your family. And, you know, kind of sweet talking me. Now he's still, we've been married. It's coming up on 6 years. So now he's still very supportive, obviously, which is amazing, but he does see the reality of the heaviness more. Right. And that's not something that I could have really prepared him for. So, I mean, he has his own opinions and how he was raised in kind of more of a typical family. So he definitely sees it from an outside perspective, but that's where we just work together in our marriage, right? And communicate and talk it out and compromise.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I feel like this is something even, you know, I've had episodes a lot about different diagnoses, whether that be autism or CP or whatever. And I feel like it's something, I think you worded it perfectly, was you can't really explain it to people. You just got to kind of be part of it, which is why I do this podcast, like just spreading a little bit of awareness, because people can see you on social media, but they don't really know the heaviness. So I just wanted to shine a light on that, not only on you, but your family and on Daniel, and kind of let people see what it really looks like. So I really appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Okay. So we talked about Daniel has a diagnosis of cerebral palsy, which like I said, we did an episode on that about a year ago. So go back and listen to it. We're going to touch base on that again, but explain what that diagnosis is and maybe even when he got his diagnosis.
Okay. So my mom's labor with Daniel was 37 hours long.
Bless her.
So I couldn't imagine that. Poor mom. but her doctor was away. And so the on-call doctor didn't know that Daniel was posterior, I guess. So when they were doing all the tests and things that they do throughout labor, they weren't getting the proper readings. And I'm sure it was like a whole thing at the time. But because my mom was so young, I think she was, because she was 20 when she got married. She had me at 21 and Daniel at 22.
She was a all bye-bye.
Planned. They were all planned pregnancies, but my mom and dad just knew they wanted to have a family. So because the fact that she was so young and this was her second pregnancy, the doctor, for whatever reason, didn't make the call to have a C-section, because I think that C-section doctor, whatever the actual technical term for them are, he was away too. So she would have had to been transported to another hospital. And for whatever reason, the circumstance just didn't happen. So when Daniel was first born, his neck was pretty limp. And I guess that can be one of the first signs of brain damage, but nobody was able to say anything to my parents at the time. So it wasn't until Daniel was one that they found his brain waves were abnormal. And then my parents, all they were really told was it was through Daniel's development that they would know more. So the first 5 years of Daniel's life, he was in and out of SickKids Hospital in Toronto, Canada. So I guess he would just aspirate into his lungs and get infections. And he was actually known as the mystery child there, because they would never know why he would just get better. And he would kind of go in and out of sickness. So yeah, like my parents knew it was lack of oxygen during the birth. But I guess like the downside is the system is kind of corrupt when it comes to families like us, because my parents didn't have a hook in the court of law to have a case of malpractice. Right. So it was one of those things, like I know my mom said when they did, I think it was the apne monitor to check on things, it got him right in between his eyes. And still to this day, he has like a really little scar from it. So it would be if he got blinded by that, then that would have been the hook. But of course, thankfully, Daniel's not blinded.
Right, right.
It's all good. But yeah, it's just little things like that that kind of put salt in the wounds, I guess, during that time. And then my mom said when he was younger, they were just really focusing on genetics and rare diseases because they were unsure, you know, of what was going on. But Daniel's chromosome structure is completely normal. And they had that testing done at Chio Hospital in Ottawa, Ontario, in their genetic department. So that's good. So yeah, that's why they just ended up, he has a diagnosis of cerebral palsy and his lack of oxygen during the birth.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of a long-winded story. There's a lot of details.
That's so interesting. You know, so the last person I had on, we talked about the diagnosis and it was easy peasy, you know, like as a diagnosis can be. Obviously, yeah. None of them are easy, but they run these tests and they figure out, okay, this is what it is. And this is what we do from then on out. Your process was so wild.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because it was like the 90s or what, I don't know, or where we live, who knows, just circumstantial, I guess.
Holy moly. Are you enjoying this conversation? This project is funded by patrons and sponsors, so if you like what you hear and you'd like to help us continue changing lives in 2024, we would love to have you join the family. Reach out to us at townsendtmusic@hotmail.com if you'd like to be a sponsor, or hop on patreon.com/townsendtmusic to join the patron family. As a thank you, you're going to receive extra podcast questions and content every episode, discounts, exclusive content, and so much more. So join the family and let's continue changing lives. Okay, so how severe would Daniel's diagnosis be, would you say?
Oh, it's pretty severe. Like he has severe CP. He's unable to talk or walk. We basically have to do everything for him. He can take a cup, like his sippy cup, and drink from it. So it's not like he can't do anything for himself. But as far as like his daily routines, he needs help with literally everything. He communicates, though, by giving us his hand for yes. So that's kind of a neat way that we communicate, right? Absolutely. Daniel, are you hungry? And he'll put his hand in our hand for yes. Yeah. So that's helpful.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. So what does a day in the day of Daniel's shoes, what does that look like? So does he have therapy? Does he have set feeding times? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I guess it all depends what kind of night he has. My mom sleeps in the bed next to him during the night because he struggles with heartburn and just trapped gas. So she'll have to burp him throughout the night and kind of monitor him depending on what he's kind of presenting. So my mom is usually the one getting him up in the mornings, and sometimes he sleeps in a bit. Other times he wakes up earlier. So she kind of handles that routine because my dad would have been gone to work by that point. So I show up for work around 10 in the morning, and my mom kind of briefs me on what's going on or what she started. If she started his bathroom routine, typically we do his bathroom routine in the morning because it's very important for Daniel, especially with his heartburn. So that can last anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, depending on the type of results and things we get, which is kind of
surprising. The bathroom routine?
Yeah.
Wow. That's the whole day. Holy moly. Okay.
Yeah. So it takes up the majority of our day. But it's really important for Daniel because everything's kind of linked. So if he doesn't have good results one day, it can have him have like bad heartburn, acid reflux, that sort of thing. It's kind of like a teeter-totter effect.
Sure,
we do our best to kind of figure it out. My mom's got all the systems on lock the best that she can. So usually by the time I get to work, he's already had breakfast and that sort of thing, unless he's slept in a little bit. So I show up with my kids and I mean, Daniel loves it, but sometimes he has the look on his face like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Cause it's like, they're get them noisy away. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the chaos. So it's kind of funny that we, you know, add a little chaos to his day, which I think is special.
Yeah.
So depending on whether we started his bathroom routine, that can last. We obviously like give him breakfast and then lunch. Sometimes his body is just not having it and he's in a lot of pain and discomfort. So on those days, we just give him like some type of protein shakes and we have all the nutrient dense powders that we can put in so that he's getting the proper supplements and nutrients that he needs for the day. That can kind of just depend on the day or the week or what have you. But that's what we do as far as feeding. We're very thankful that Daniel can be fed orally, which is awesome because that's something my mom had to fight a lot when he was younger. They wanted to tube feed him. And my mom was okay with it, you know, if that's how he had to eat. But she was really proactive for being so young. She ended up thickening up his food so then that way he could swallow it properly because she found when it was thinner, he would aspirate into his lungs. And that's when he wasn't able to, you know, consume food the way we would. So that's been great because he's never had to have the option of having like a feeding tube. Not that we were closed off to it,
sure.
But you want to fight for the things that you can hold on to sort of thing.
So listen to your mom. That's awesome.
Yeah. Go she's a powerhouse. Like,
yeah, that's awesome.
So it just depends his diet, what we feed him, that sort of thing throughout the day. Usually in the afternoon, once we're done the bathroom routine, we either watch TV, hang out on the couch, or we try and do an activity with him, like get him outside, which can be a little trickier in the winter times or in the winter time, or if it's cold, cold air, sometimes he can't breathe if it's too windy and cold air. And that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But we do our best cause he loves getting outside. Or we take him to go swimming in the pool. So my parents have this little hydro current spa therapy pool thing in their house, that they actually got secondhand, and my parents are very handy and thrifty
awesome.
People. It's
yeah.
pretty amazing. So he loves to swim. So it's been great to have something like that inside in our house. And we do that quite often as well. Sometimes we'll do that in the morning and then have his bathroom routine in the afternoon. So it just all depends on the day.
Yeah. I was going to say, I see that pool thing in some of your videos. I'm like, that's so cool. It just like, it's almost like a little machine that drops him in and he sits in the water. That's so cool. I love it. I love that those are invented, you know, like I love that those exist.
Yeah. It's so needed, especially for people like Daniel.
Absolutely. Cause they love water too. Who doesn't like to float in the water? Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. I know.
Okay. So you're his sister. And when you talk about going into work, you're talking about your job, your role is Daniel's caregiver, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I work 10 to 4 PM every day.
Oh my goodness. So when you
besides
were growing,
weekends, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were growing up and you were learning about Daniel and you realize like, okay, Daniel's a little different than I am, or maybe a little different than my friends are. Did your parents chat with you about what was going on with Daniel? Did you just kind of understand? How did that conversation go? Or was it even a conversation?
I honestly don't remember having like a formal conversation about it. I mean, I was only 13 months older. So I think it was just for them, like leading by example, watching how my parents treated him, what they did with him. I think naturally as a young child, I just picked up a lot of stuff. Of course, like I'm sure my parents did have certain conversations, but it wasn't some big formal thing. Look, your brother has CP. He's a little different. And as a family, we're going to have to conquer this.
Right.
It just kind of happened. And I don't ever really remembering like, oh, my brother's so different. Like it was just my life. This is the only life I know. Right.
Yeah.
So in that way, I think it made it a lot easier for me to not even accept, just kind of like it was normal for
me.
Right?
Yeah. Daniel is Daniel and that is it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super cool. So when you became an adult and you were transitioning to, okay, now I'm old enough to be his legal caregiver and kind of help my parents out, was that a conversation you guys had, or was it another like, okay, I'm just going to continue this role and it's going to be my career?
Yeah. So again, that wasn't really a formal chat that we had. I've just always been, I guess, naturally really caring, and I just always helped with Daniel. So I actually started working with Daniel after I graduated from college. So I knew I didn't want to live in the city, which is Toronto, Canada. That's where I went to college. So I moved back home, and my mom was like, why don't you just pick up a couple of shifts here and there with Daniel while you kind of figure out your life and where you want to go. So that's what I did because I needed a job. So I ended up just really enjoying it. I love the fact that I get to spend so much time with my family and my brother, as well as making a life for myself, because I mean, you got to be an adult.
Right. Sadly, bills keep coming.
Yeah. I know. So I feel truly blessed that I can have this sort of setup. And I've been doing it now for like 10 years, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Okay. That is so cool. I love that. That is really neat. I love that you have the opportunity to be his caregiver, because obviously, other than Daniel, you and the family are going to know what he needs best.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how we feel.
Okay. So speaking of that, I know that you get a lot of questions about why don't you place Daniel in a home? Why don't you put Daniel somewhere where you guys can get a little bit of a break, or however you want to word that?
Yeah.
What, tell us a little bit about that decision. Like, what made y'all want to keep him at home? Well, I think everyone would know why you want to keep him home, but to be honest, that's so much work, and it's so heavy, and it requires everyone to be involved. And I think for people from the outside looking in are like, it'd be so much easier to have him in a home. So walk us through that, because I know you get that question a lot on social media.
Yeah, you're right. And you're right. A lot of people from the outside are like, why do you put in so much work?
It's kind of like even asking that question, it makes me feel bad, because it's like, it's your brother. Like,
I know. It's very common though. Like, and I totally get where it comes from, because I feel the heaviness. Trust me.
Girl, I feel it. I can only imagine. Yeah. Yeah. So what was that? What was that process like, that decision making?
So, yeah, so we actually did put Daniel in a special needs home. My mom actually tried two different homes with him. So it was during a time where our grandma was actually dying of cancer. So my mom wanted to be there for her mom, and she figured it was a good time to try it.
Sure.
So it wasn't like this easy process. My mom had to fight so hard to get him accepted. That's something I really remember as a kid, because my mom was a stay-at-home mom. So she was on the phone every day pleading with all the right people. Who can I talk to you that's up from you? Kind of climbing the ladder that way. And she had her sort of lines. Do you have children? Do you know what it's like? Blah, blah, blah. And she had her sort of tactics sort of thing. So it wasn't just some easy process, which you'd think that it would just be something you have to kind of maybe do some paperwork, sign up, have meetings and this and that.
Right.
But it was actually a fight to be able to do that, at least here in Canada, where we live, Ontario. So my mom finally won that battle and got him accepted in one of the better homes in our area, which was really good. And it was helpful to my mom at that time, because then she was able to focus on taking care of her mom towards the end of her life. So I couldn't imagine, you know, what she was going through at that time, right? Having to put her son kind of on the back burner a bit and try it out and see if it works, as well as have another heavy sort of life season. So yeah, it was pretty amazing now looking back on it. So I'm only speaking on our experience, because I obviously realized that special needs homes do have a purpose, and obviously not all families can do what we do, or maybe want to do what we do. And like, that's okay. It's everybody's journey. But it's, for us, it really wasn't the care that you would want for your family member, really, when it comes down to it. I think the only cool part about it for me was the fact that we could go out for dinner easily. which is kind of weird to say out loud, but we didn't have to pack a bunch of bags or leave early if Daniel wasn't doing well. We literally were like, let's go out for dinner. Yeah. And it was peaceful, simple, enjoyable, right? Not having to worry about where to put his wheelchair or, you know, just people looking and being curious if he was being noisy or what have you.
Yeah. So that was everyday life was a little bit easier.
Yeah. In that sense. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, like our family definitely had more freedom, but it did come at a cost. It was weird. You didn't feel like a complete family. Like, yeah. I don't know, just something was missing as much as the care was 100% easier.
Right.
But my mom was still pretty hands-on. She would take Daniel home, I think for 2 weeks at a time, as much as she could. So she really used the home to her advantage in a way, because she was hoping it was going to be a way for her to be better for Daniel. So as a family, we could do more if we didn't have to take on 100% of his care. But it just didn't work. Daniel didn't really thrive. So for example, Daniel loves to soak in warm water. So baths are his thing. But in the home, they could only put him in a bath chair with like a couple inches of water for safety reasons, right? Which I get. But his hygiene was so poor, he ended up getting pimples in his hair, which is not common for Daniel. And yeah, there was like other things that went on. Like he has some dietary restrictions. So my mom would provide, say, like the special milk for him. And then the home would put it in the freezer and they would pull it out and not taste it before they gave it to him. So one day my mom was there and was like, why is he not drinking this? He should drink it. She tasted it and it was sour.
Oh no.
So it's just like random things like that. I mean, even one time we visited and Daniel had a black eye. So my mom, you know, questioned the staff and they said he hit himself. Well, in our experience, Daniel's not that spastic and he's never hit himself in the face. So I don't know really what went on there, whether it maybe he did, or unless it was another person in the home or what have you, but you always have that worry of he's not under your watch. Not that you don't trust other people. There was many staff in there that were genuinely wonderful, but the way it's set up, those staff aren't able to shine like they should. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, at the end of the day, we just didn't feel like a complete family. And I actually remember we did have a formal talk about this one of my parents wanting to bring him back home. And it was something we decided all together as a family. And I think it was pretty big on my parents' part because they knew that they wouldn't have any financial assistance besides like some programming and stuff for his wheelchair and equipment and that sort of thing. But we decided just to go for it. And it was funny enough, a couple months later, my mom got a call from the programming that we have now, wanting to work with my parents to be able to provide this programming to hire staff in their home. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting just how, because technically with Daniel being in a special needs home, he had kind of money on his head. So when he was pulled out, they weren't getting that money. So then this new programming came into place and I guess kind of essentially like maybe wanted to help, but get that money. And however that system works, I don't know the ins and outs of it. But that's the only reason why my mom got the call from this programming that we have, which is really amazing. And it's helped.
Sure.
It's so helpful. It helps so many families. And I think that's kind of the better way of doing it for any loving family out there who wants to take this on.
Yeah.
Because like you say, it is better in your family's care, right? As long as everyone has good intentions.
Yeah. Right. Man, that is so intriguing to me. There's so many questions that we could go as far as that. I've heard a lot of wonderful stories about homes. I've heard a lot of stories that things like that, like you never know, something could have hit him. He could have hit himself, but you just never know. As a family, that could just stress you out so, so much, wondering about Daniel's care when you're not there, you know? Goodness gracious. Speaking of that, since Daniel doesn't communicate very well and he doesn't get around on his own, what do you wish people knew about Daniel?
Well, I think the main thing is that his life has value, because I think people look at Daniel, and because they don't see that he can communicate or have much of a life, they think, well, why would God do that to him? Or what's the point? Like, what's the point of you as a family doing so much work for what? And you can understand it to a certain extent, but regardless, like, his life is so valuable, and he is such a wonderful person when you get to know him, and when he feels comfortable enough to reveal his personality, right? He has an adventurous spirit. He's just trapped in his own body, which I couldn't imagine, like, yes, myself. He basically just wants to be treated like any 30-year-old guy. And it's important, I think, that people look past his disability and acknowledge who he is, even just by saying hi or smiling, acknowledging that he's in the room, I think is very important. You get, people can be a little nervous. I mean, I know for myself, if I'm around others who maybe act a little different, right, or have a different disability that I'm not familiar with, you can feel a little nervous, sure, or unsure of how to interact. But I think the main thing is just to start off with a smile and say hi.
That's right. That's right. I love it. Absolutely. I'm huge on treat other people like you want to be treated, which mm-hmm. includes a greeting, at least a smile, something.
Yeah. Oh, for yeah. sure.
I love that. Very good. Okay. So I imagine, okay, I just can't even wrap my head around how much stress you probably have. Like we said earlier in the conversation, I mean, your sister, your full-time caregiver for not just anybody, your brother, who we all know, it's not always pretty. I have a brother. We know how that goes. That relationship is a love-hate one. You're a mother of your own kids. You're a wife. So many roles. So I always like to ask my guests, what does self-care look like for Jesse? What do you do to make you feel like you again? Or does that even exist? I mean, you've got a busy schedule.
Yeah, it does. It looks a little... not too different, maybe a little different. It's definitely a lot. Honestly, I do feel like I'm spread thin. Yeah. Not in like a terrible way, but just I'm going to everybody's schedule.
Yeah.
Which can be a lot. And my mom is amazing, and she does everything she can to help me. And I'm like, no, like, I need to help you. So that's definitely the teamwork comes into play there. But for me, I think the main thing is I pray a lot. My faith has definitely played a huge role in my self-care. I'm always talking to God, like, seriously.
Yeah, you're like, please help.
You're like, come on, I need some help. So I guess that's like the main thing. But for other ways that I self-care, I love to work out. And it's very important that I live a healthy lifestyle. And it just love how mentally clear I feel, and how strong I feel physically, which is obviously important being a caregiver.
Yeah, I was going to say, mom. How do you work out? I feel like you're lifting Daniel, like a 30-year-old man, if people can picture that, you're lifting his entire body weight. Like, after that day, I'd be like, shoo, no more working out for me. Like, I don't even know how you have the capacity to work out.
Now, we do have lifts to help us. Sometimes it's just quicker to lift. I know that's not the right answer.
I get it.
But it's just, it is what it is. So it's there if we need it.
Sure. Sure. I get that.
So yeah, being physically fit and just working out is, I think, a great de-stressor for me, for anyone really. And it's something I personally am passionate about in my personal life. And then some days self-care looks as simple as a good skincare routine. Right. Sometimes you got to keep it pretty simple.
Absolutely.
Or other times a little retail therapy kind of helps too, you know,
relatable.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something important to kind of touch on, is self-care doesn't have to be like an entire week away with massages and, you know, all these eating grapes from somebody's hand. Like, that's not realistic. We live in this world where everything is like work, 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 work. So it can be as simple as, like I said, stopping and saying a prayer, stopping and doing a little workout, just something real quick is just as good enough. Or obviously you want to do a little bit, but even those little blips of self-care make such a difference.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely it does.
Yeah. Okay. So where do you feel like you learned the most about cerebral palsy, or where did y'all find the most support getting through all of this with Daniel?
So I'd say I learned the most about CP just firsthand growing up with my brother.
Yeah.
To be like completely honest, I feel like there isn't a lot of support for families or even the siblings out there, at least like none that I've really come across. Maybe especially growing up in the 90s, there wasn't, I mean, we had dial up internet at one point, but
man, I just had a flashback.
Yeah. I don't know how my mom did her research back then. So I think we're lucky to grow up in this sort of time where it's easy to Google things.
Your mom was a rock star.
Yeah.
Like she figured all that out without internet and like quick internet and like the Google right at your fingertips. Like that's awesome.
I know. I couldn't imagine that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was just all through my own experiences. And that's something that I've been kind of having on my heart that I want to change somehow. I don't know how yet.
Yeah.
But the only support really out there is maybe like therapy if you want to go that route. But that's not even really tied to, you know, being a family that has somebody with cerebral palsy in it and the feelings and stuff that you'll have to go through, right? The hardships and this and that. So yeah, there wasn't really any support, which is kind of sad, but I think that's why I'm really close to my family. And luckily, like I grew up in a very healthy family. So we were just able to kind of rally together, and they're really the only people that I can relate to as far as like life stuff.
Sure.
Because I never really grew up knowing many families that had a similar situation to ours. So I think that's kind of what made us so close. But yeah, that's definitely something I want to change, because I think it is important that families like mine don't feel alone and that we could all kind of support each other. I just don't know how that would look.
Yeah. I have a good first step. You should be on a podcast called You're Not Alone and
there
talk about, oh, no, wait, we already did that. That's exactly why I want to do it. Like I said earlier, there's so many reasons. And one of them is to let people know that they're not alone. These people on the podcast have diagnoses that people have never heard of, super common ones. Like I feel like cerebral palsy and autism. And it's just to bring awareness, help people feel a little bit less alone, no matter what their role is in the caregiving. I hate that you didn't have that. Do you feel like, I know you're super active on social media since you started your accounts, have you had a lot of people reaching out since then?
Yeah. So I've always kind of shared Daniel on social media, but originally my account was used for more of a business account. I used to own an online clothing shop, and then that was the whole thing. And I decided to close that and start having a family, but I didn't want to let go of the creativity of social media, because working with Daniel is amazing, but it's not so creative, and I'm a creative person. So I kind of held on to it and kind of went through like sharing cute outfits or home stuff or kind of just whatever was present in my life at the time. And then I would always share Daniel here and there, but not like fully 100% committed to just Daniel content. But recently I just felt like there was no value in what I was sharing, and nothing was really kind of sticking where people were enjoying what I was sharing. So one day I just shared a reels, of Daniel and sort of our routine, and that kind of popped off, and I'm like, whoa, okay. Like, this is kind of cool because it's easy for me to share. I'm not having to kind of, you know, section off a day on the weekend to film a bunch of outfit videos or what have you. This is my daily life that I'm able to easily just hit record and edit on my own time. So once that happened, I'm like, okay, let's like go all in on this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been really amazing just to kind of build my own community around this. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many siblings and even parents reach out to me, which is so encouraging. And it's mind blowing. Like, one of our reels hit, I think, 3.1 million views. And I'm like, how? Like, what? And it's just amazing just to connect with others and hear their stories and their experience. And to hear that other people can relate to what I share, or even for the parents out there that enjoy what I share, so then they can get a perspective from a sibling, mm-hmm. right? Because they have a similar scenario where they have a neurotypical child, and you know, any parent, you worry about your kids, but when you have one that's so extreme from the other, I could imagine that that would be really challenging to navigate.
Yeah. Well, how cool. It sounds like you're making a difference already.
You're not yeah, I guess I am. Maybe in some ways. It's just weird because I feel like half the time I'm just talking to myself or in my own mind. You know, you don't really, it doesn't kind of get to your head, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
That's not a bad thing. Not a bad thing. But you're already changing the world. And I know for sure you caught my eye. I wanted to have you to share with my listeners. So there's one step right there. I think you're doing amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Jesse, thank you for hopping on with my podcast listeners.
Oh, well, I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
It's been such a pleasure. Absolutely. All right, guys, you know how this works. So she and I are going to keep chatting. We're going to do a few more questions, but these are for my patrons only. If you want to listen to the rest of the conversation, hop on patreon.com/TownsendTMusic. They're exclusive questions after every interview. You also get a lot of really cool rewards, a lot of free stuff, a lot of behind the scenes. And that's how we keep this podcast going. So hop on patreon.com/TownsendTMusic. If not, we will see you next time.
If you'd like to hear the rest of this interview, visit patreon.com/TownsendTMusic. And don't forget, you can also watch the interviews on our YouTube channel at Townsend T Music YouTube.
If you're looking to buy or sell, I have the perfect realty company for you. Clark & Co. Realty is located in the Benton, Bryant, Arkansas area. And they understand that buying or selling a home is more than just a transaction. It's a life-changing experience. That's why their team of highly seasoned real estate professionals is dedicated to providing exceptional, personalized services for all their clients. They truly take great pride in the relationships they build, and they always work relentlessly on the client's behalf to help them achieve their perfect real estate goals. They always have the client in mind, and I can speak firsthand when I say how reliable, trustworthy, and quick they were. When I was looking to buy my first home, they were there with me every step of the way, answering every question I could think of. They showed me a great amount of knowledge and patience through the process. It's no wonder they've won so many awards for their outstanding services and their excellent relationships with clients. So if you're looking to buy or sell, there is no better option than Clark & Co. Realty.